Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is obviously an extraordinary personality. Obviously a personality who was an instrument of Krishna. He begins to write about his own life. And there is a biography called Svalikita Jivani, and it is, which means what he wrote about his own life. And there he describes that when he was a boy, that in his family they were not exactly devotees of Krishna. His family were more Durga worshippers, so he describes. But he says there was this there was a maid servant in the family. It was an aristocratic family, wealthy family. So there was a maid servant within the family, and in the back of the garden, there was a tree, and this tree had like red, very sweet fruits on it, some Bengali fruit, whatever it was. But everybody was saying that this tree was haunted by a terrible ghost. So he was looking at the tree, he was looking at the fruits and thinking about the ghost, and like caught up in this dilemma, right? But then the maidservant, she seemed to know a lot about ghosts. She was saying that ghosts had eyes fiery like coal, like burning coal. She knew a lot about ghosts. And she also knew, she also explained how ghosts could possess people and all these things, but that a ghost could not touch you if you chant the name of Ram. So then, Eureka. he found the solution. So he decided to try it out. Ram, 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 ram. Ran to the tree. Ram, 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 ram. Grabbed all the fruits. Ram, 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 ram. Non-stop chanting. Walked away with lots of fruits. No problem with no ghost whatsoever. So in this way, even at an early age, he developed faith. He developed faith in the holy name. And the holy name, of course, became a very, very important part in his life, or in his preaching. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in Jiva Dharma, which is one of his main books, he dedicates a large portion to the chanting of the holy name, and also in a very famous book, Harinam Chintamani. So I'll come back to the holy name, but first I will stay a little longer with the early life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Not far from Mayapur, on the way to Calcutta, is the town called Ranagat. It is a stronghold of Christian missionaries who settled down there even at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Not far from Ranagat is the village known as Ulagram, maybe 15 kilometers into the interior of the main highway is Ulagram. And Ulagram was the town of his maternal grandfather. And his maternal grandfather was very influential there. And if one goes to Ulagram today, one will see that there's still quite some property. There's a temple which was once managed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family. And one can see that place. It's a nice place. However, in that place, a great tragedy occurred, something inconceivable. Namely, that When Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a young man, he was studying in Calcutta. Calcutta was not as big as it is now. It was still a much smaller city with many villages around it that later on were swallowed up by the big city. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was studying in university. He was part of those young men who were following a modern education. It wasn't going on so much, you know. It's like, but the British started this university. I mean, prior to that, that there was a traditional Indian Vedic system of education, but the British introduced the Western system of university and all that. And Srila Bhaktivinoda went to that education. So somehow or other, even in his student days, he already got married, which is a little bit unusual. I mean, normally in India people wait until they finish the studies. But he was already married, so that was a little difficult, you know, to be married, to look after a family, to finance his studies and so on. Then the news came that in the village, in Ulagram, in the village of his grandfather, a terrible epidemic had struck, a cholera epidemic. And the news came that many people in the village had just died because of this epidemic. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he rushed to Ulagram only to find everyone was killed, practically. The whole village was dead, including his grandfather, including other relatives. Everyone wiped out, the whole village wiped out. And in the middle of all that, his mother is sitting there crying, right, as a survivor. So you can imagine, just picture the situation. I mean, extreme, you know, extreme situation. Right? That alone, you know, would like be a book, you know. That alone would be an event in someone's life he could speak about the rest of his life. You know what I'm saying? And he somehow or other took his mother away from there, and with difficulty his mother lived with him while he was studying in Calcutta. And eventually he passed his law exam became a magistrate for the British government. Stationed in various places. So yeah, the other branch of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is of the family appears to be rooted in Orissa. Close friend of Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj is Fakir Mohan, who is initiated in the Gaudiya Math and who is a PhD and who has particularly did studies on the history of Orissa and then particularly in relation to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he did a thesis and shows like a whole family history in Orissa as well, from the paternal side. And there, of course, was the deity of Radha Madhava. When we sing this song, Jai Radha Madhava, it's actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. And Radha Madhava, it was not just a song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was worshipping deities of Radha Madhava, particularly. These deities are now cared for by Fakir Mohan, and they once a year they come to Vrindavan and visit our temple in Krishna, and are on the altar for a period of time in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had roots both in Orissa, roots in West Bengal. The family seemed to have hailed from Kanyakubja, which is in Uttar Pradesh, Kedarnath Dutta. Dutta is a somewhat undefined family lineage. It's a little difficult. In India, everyone's family lineage is really, really clear because of the Vedic culture, and by the name you can sort of see what someone's family background and is, which area they came from, which caste they belong to, and everything you can get from the name. Like, you know, if you have a Muni Lal, they are UP Walas, you know, that's for sure. Right. But the Agarwals are business people who are from Haryana. And the Duttas seem to have mixed influences within the caste, right, from various communities. Therefore, in Bengal, they became Kayastas. Kayasta was the class whose caste was not so defined, but who at the same time were aristocratic and who would take important roles in government. Narottam Das Thakur was from such a background, Bhaktivinod Thakur from such a background. That, of course, is not important because Bhaktivinod Thakur embraced the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and became a fully transcendental personality. Not at such an early age, though. It took some time before Bhaktivinod Thakur became a full-fledged Vaishnava. It was also not so defined. You know, for us, it's clear you join or you don't. You know, there is a movement. There's Prabhupada's movement. It's there are temples. There are places of worship. There are books. There are initiations. There is a whole system of becoming part of it. But at the time of Bhaktivinod Thakur, Vaishnavism had sort of lost a lot of its glory. At the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was Nityananda who started preaching in Bengal, and he did it very liberally and just through the holy name, and anybody just became absorbed in that, and it was ecstatic. But then it was, the movement wasn't so structured. Then Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya, they came later, and they made the movement more structured, with books and places of worship and so on. But then and they brought the books from the Goswamis, and like this, Krishna consciousness became more formal. And it became very strong, the movement, for a while in Bengal. But then again, it started to go down, and so much speculation was going on, and so many deviant groups that were not at all following the proper teachings, and so many things were going on in the name of Vaishnavism, that by the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the word Vaishnava was not at all respected. Vaishnavas at that time were fish eaters, Vaishnavas were practicing tantra, ritualistic sexual activity was going on, sahajism, yes. Where it is, I read that they were offering on the day of the marriage, they would offer the wife to the guru, and then the next morning she was Guru Prasad. Just to give you an idea of some elements that existed in the culture of Bengal, and all in that environment. In that environment, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur grew up, and in that Bengali environment where Shakta worship was predominant, the worship of Durga and Kali, he grew up, and gradually, so in Calcutta, the British were settling in. And the first, a group of Orientalists came, a group of professors who were very interested in the Indian culture. And they came to Calcutta, and because, as I said, it was not so urbanized in those days, there was a large field, a large area, open area, sort of quite central. And there they made a major settlement, a major British settlement. And that became Fort Williams, and the field around was the Maidan, which is still sort of very central in Calcutta. So Fort Williams, yes, there was an army presence and an academic presence. Hare Krishna. There in Fort Williams, the many scholars from England came, settled there to study the culture of India and try and sort of present it in a more modern way, like in an academic way. So many of the intellectual young Bengalis, they were all attracted to that. And they kind of went for the modern education, the British education, and started to study their own tradition through that Western academic approach. And they were known as the Bhadra Lok, the auspicious people. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of them. And many prominent Bengali writers and so on, political leaders, were all part of that particular group. They became the leaders. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was there as a writer. He was a very prolific writer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about 100 books. Now, Bhaktivinoda, kind of in that identity of a student in a British educational system, was not so committed to the culture of his upbringing. He was not very interested in Shakta worship, which is Shakta worship or Durga worship is basically, Durga is the deity of the material energy. And she has this trident. She rides on a tiger. She has 10 arms and she has weapons in all the arms. And she has a trident with 3 points. And these 3 points are representing material suffering, the tapatraya, the threefold miseries. The miseries caused by body and mind, by other living beings, and by natural circumstances. So everyone in the material world is being stung by that trident. We are all experiencing that trident ourselves. So therefore, the Shaktas are trying to pacify Durga so that she will not stab with her trident. So they make offerings to Durga, and then there's the ghastly form of Durga, which is Kali. Kali is then bloodthirsty. So they're offering different animals and so on, with the idea, if we offer this blood, then she won't take ours. That's the kind of Shakta worship. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although Bengal was predominated by that kind of worship, and his family were also Shaktas, he was not interested in that. He didn't pursue it. So in his student life, we see that he didn't have much of a link with his traditional faith. In the sense that he's not a practicing Shakta. But for a while he had a leaning towards Christianity, a lot of interest in Christianity. And it some say his teachers thought he was going to become a Christian. He had a lot of appreciation for Christianity, for the merciful, compassionate nature that is there within Christianity. But Then, as the British were criticizing the Indian tradition, he came in a strong way defending the culture of India, and then emerged as a Vaishnava, strongly as a Vaishnava. So his identity as a Vaishnava sort of comes somewhat later then in his life. But that identity obviously became very, very strong and very deep and very much focused on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sometimes called the seventh Goswami, it is because he particularly through his writing was establishing the teaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only through his writing, but also through his studies of Mahaprabhu's tradition. And it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur who ascertained the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and made a place of worship there, collected for it, started the temple, the yoga pit, and so on. And also it is Bhaktivinoda Thakur who reveals this book called the Navadvipdham Mahatmya. This book, the Navadvipdham Mahatmya, is a kind of... there's an obscure element to the book, namely that it describes a parikrama that Lord Nityananda is taking Jiva Goswami on of the nine islands of Navadvip, and it describes each of the nine islands and what pastimes Mahaprabhu performed, and it describes Antardvip and the yoga pit as the center of Antardvip. The book describes particularly something that transpired between Lord Nityananda and Jiva Goswami. The thing is that we have no earlier reference to that than Bhaktivinoda. It's like so many hundreds of years later, Bhaktivinoda is the first one who writes about this experience of Jiva Goswami. Nowhere else do we find anything. That doesn't mean that there was nothing else. Because Bengal was... There was a lot of competition in Bengal for prominence, and so many things could have been hidden, destroyed, and so on. So the Navadvipdham Mahatmya stands sort of on its own. Right? It doesn't have a link with anything earlier. It stands there on its own as a book of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and those who are outside of our tradition will say, well, that's just Bhaktivinoda made it up. He made it up. That's the criticism we often hear. However, in our movement, this Navadvipdham Mahatmya is very important because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, took the Navadvipdham Mahatmya and established the parikrama of Navadvip and basically established it as truth to the world, as a fact to the world, and that has established Mayapur. And of course, we carry on, you know, ISKCON is carrying on, spreading the fame of Mayapur. And all that we accept as pure transcendental revelation. So, whether this was a revelation, you know, to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or whether he got it through tradition and through research, we don't know. But obviously, this is the absolute truth, as is confirmed by all great devotees, starting with Jagannath Das Babaji, Gaura Vibhava Bhumistvam Nidhista Satyana Priya Vaishnav Sarvabhoma Jagannathaya Te Namaha. That he brought Jagannath Das Babaji to that place, who confirmed it. So, Prabhupada, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta confirmed it, Prabhupada confirmed it. And in this way, but others criticize. The Babaji's will criticize and say the birthplace is in Navadvip. Yes. But that is simply motivated by desire for personal gain, because to have the birthplace of Mahaprabhu is worth a lot of money. Yeah. So Mayapur the Antardweep is the central place where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Bhaktivinoda Thakur established that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is such a person, he did so many things that it's like when you describe his life, it's hard to know where to begin and where to end. You can describe what he did as a magistrate. He was in charge of the Jagannath Puri temple for a while and purifying all the practices in the temple. As the man, he was the manager appointed by the government, the authority for the temple. So then he could really do something about certain inappropriate activities in the temple. In Vrindavan, he cleared the area of many dacoits in that way. So he did Dham Seva. In Mayapur, he established the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So see how in these three dhams he did very important things. It's like basically gave us the dhams, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace in the center. Then, I have 15 minutes left because today is a busy day. So, the last 15 minutes, then for 10 minutes I'll speak on his writings, and then 5 minutes really for questions. So, his writings, I was saying that from an early age he had developed somehow or other faith in the holy name, and that early faith fructified, and we see that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in some of his main works is writing about the holy name, Harinam Chintamani I mentioned before, and Jaiva Dharma. In Jaiva Dharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda is explaining the nature of the holy name. Of course, Rupa Goswami had left the success to come in his Pajavali, in his verse book. We find Rupa Goswami produced a verse book, and in that verse book, dispersed all over the book, there are the 8 prayers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sikshastakam. Later, then Krishnadas Kaviraj takes the Sikshastakam and sort of puts it as one unit in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Like it's like when, as we are now having the 8 verses of the Sikshastakam. Like they were separate verses that Mahaprabhu at different points in time composed. Anyway, so the second verse, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nitya Sarva Sakti Satarpita Niyamitas Maranena Kali Tadri Sita Vakripa Bhagavan Mamapitu Dajan Idrisan Ihajin Namaraga. The second verse explaining about the holy names, and that all Krishna's potencies are invested in these names such as Krishna and Govinda. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains that there are 2 types of names of Krishna. Some are mukhya and some are guna. Some are direct and some are indirect, or primary and secondary names, as he also calls it. He says the primary names are those names that describe Krishna's eternal features, such as Krishna, Govinda, Gopal. These are all names that describe Krishna's eternal positions. But if we take a name like, let's say, Srishtikarta, the one who executed the creation, that is a name where the Lord acts within this world. So that's a secondary name. Yeah. So it is. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining one should chant the primary names of Krishna. And by chanting these primary names of Krishna, one can particularly develop that love of God, of Golok. And so in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about chanting of the holy names. In Harinam Chintamani, he is elaborating on a discussion that took place between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur. Obviously, the inspiration is drawn from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there is a discussion about the holy name between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur. But then in Harinam Chintamani, that discussion becomes much more elaborate, and he makes many interesting points. There he elaborates on the ten offenses. He elaborates on the primary results of chanting. He explains the nature of namabhas and the dim reflection of the holy name, and he explains the result of sudanam, or the pure chanting of the holy name. The reflection of the holy name in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that in the early morning the sun is rising and the light is visible in the sky, but the sun has not come over the horizon yet. This is the abhas, this is the reflection of the sun. In the same way, the name is present in abhas form. It's not yet fully present. In abhas form, it can destroy all sinful activities and give us liberation from birth and death. But when actually the sun disks appear, then of course the power of the sun becomes much more manifest. When Sudanam appears, that is what can give love of God. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was emphasizing this chanting of Sudanam. He's saying that the chanting in Jivadharma, he describes, chanting is both a sadhana and a sadhya. It is both a practice as well as the goal. Or as sometimes says, what comes from chanting? More chanting. That's the result. What you get from chanting, as a reward from the chanting, more chanting. Yeah. Sure you want that. So, sadhya is the goal. So the chanting is the process and the goal. Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we are chanting, we're counting our rounds. He says, why are we counting our rounds? Not just so that we can fulfill a fixed quota, but we are counting our rounds so that we can see that we increase. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for a period of time, was chanting 300,000 names a day. He did that vow, the same vow as Haridas Thakur, of chanting 300,000 names, and he chanted on a mala. Later he gave that mala to his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, and told him to also do that, to chant these 300,000 names, and then you have to chant 1 billion names in the vow, and that takes about 10 years to complete, if you do it at 300,000 names a day. So what kind of personalities, obviously, were Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, who could take such vows, who could at the same time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur can write 100 books, yeah, 100 books. Who can write 100 books? Who can work as a magistrate at the same time in a court and be seriously involved? Who can get home at 5 o'clock every day and take little prasad, and who can rise at 11 at night, getting up at 11 at night And then who can study all night? And who can write all night? Who can do such a thing other than someone who is a Vaishnava of the topmost level? Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very broad in his books. He's a very broad thinker. He's really a visionary. He's sort of identifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. He picks up the thread from Chaitanya Charitamrita very much so. He reconnects there. But then he elaborates on that regularly in his books. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a big source of authority because that's where he connects. But he expands and what is in and what is not in and which practices are part of it, and very brilliantly and liberally he's writing, and he is deeply thinking. In Jiva Dharma he gives us a whole overview of the entire philosophy, and at the same time he gives us an insight into the Bengali culture that is surrounding Lord Chaitanya's movement, and all wrapped up in a very intriguing story, right, that's unfolding, of Rajanath and envious family members who are trying to block him from becoming a devotee through heavy politics and or through some Vaishnavas. No, that's too complicated. Time is running out. So, there's practically no area of the Krishna conscious philosophy that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur hasn't elaborately written something about. Right? Therefore, whatever we discuss, whether it's Varna Ashram or whether it's any aspect of Krishna consciousness, we always find, okay, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said something about it. Very, very broadly covered the entire scope of the Krishna conscious philosophy, and it's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is giving all that to Bhaktisiddhanta, who then takes that, all that information of Bhaktivinoda, and sort of boils it down, and he boils it down to an essence, and then he takes the essence and backs that up further with scripture, and then Bhaktisiddhanta gives a very focused mission of Krishna consciousness, whereas Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sort of delineating boundaries and very broad, very broadly covering Krishna consciousness. So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a preacher, is a protector of the Siddhanta of both in by protecting places of worship and is in his writing, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the thinker that gave shape to the modern Krishna consciousness. Then it's Srila Bhaktisiddhanta who takes the ideas, trims it down to something that's going to work, you know, for the world. So it's basically some major principles, and then Prabhupada streamlines that and kind of makes it understandable and practical for the people of the world. And in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta and Prabhupada are the three main architects of modern Krishna consciousness. They, beginning with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's the visionary, and then, so today, therefore, this day is very important to worship. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very important. It's not just he's an acharya in our line. No, he is particularly one of the founders of Krishna consciousness for the modern world, which is what we've got. Therefore, it's very important that we learn something about the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and read some of his books and so on. I'll end with that, since we have time constraint today. So any question, comment?
I just Maharaj recently saw a presentation of the temple of Vedic planetarium. And within it, when it begins, there's this black pyramid in the, you know, in the beginning of the clip. We had shown it at a program where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was there and we brought some students. And immediately, since the word is out on Illuminati and that type of symbology, they were immediately suspicious of our message and mission. And I just wanted to know that how does one maybe give words to those who are promoting the temple to either, you know, explain the need for it or what of the negative effects of having it there, because it even seems out of place.
Bhakti Chiru Maharaj, he's the natural person. He has authority in Mayapur. He's still a GBC. In Mayapur, so he's on all the committees, and he has authority. So if they'll take it from anyone, it's from him. Yeah, these complexities arise, you know, in presenting Krishna consciousness. It's very difficult to present Krishna consciousness in a way where all are pleased, right? And sometimes, sometimes the preaching of a particular acharya may also cause some confusion. Like, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was liberal in his writing, people who want a more liberal type of Krishna consciousness, they sometimes go to, they find a quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur so that they can stretch the limits a little bit, and they feel that Bhaktisiddhanta was like much more conservative then. So, you know, to give an example relating to the day, and it's like your question is on a particular point, and I'm bringing it, I gave you a practical answer, now I'm bringing it back to the topic, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I'm pointing out that it's hard to preach in a way where people of all communities and all cultures of the world are feeling comfortable with. But if the purity is there, such externals are ultimately not going to be the obstacles. There will be people who will make a lot of noise about it, but those are the kind of people that want to give the dog a bad name and hang it. You know, they are looking for a way to find fault so that they don't have to be part of it. Okay, rejected, Illuminati, rejected. Those who are a little bit more sincere will not become distracted by such an obstacle. They will still take it. Just as Prabhupada went to New York and preached, war from the Bhagavad Gita, which is, you know, in the middle of the peace movement. 1, 2, 3, 4, what are we fighting for? Those are the days. No one wanted to fight. And Prabhupada saying, Arjuna has to fight. It was not popular. So I think sometimes, one thing I detect in Africa, you know, and that is like, the African people think that we have to really present Krishna consciousness in a very special way for the Africans? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we should just give it as it is. And it will work fine for the Africans, for the Chinese, for the Dutch, even it works, you know. Can you believe it or not? And they're hard heads, as you know. So I think it's the purity that's really going to do it, not a strategy.
So in this match, the question is, in your knowledge, what's the connection?
Pyramids.
Yeah. And the temple, even design-wise, it's just what it's doing. And also that angle is not really just like African people.
Yeah. No, I have no idea.
The whole world.
I have no idea about pyramids. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not my field. Mummies and pyramids.
Just to say about this temple, that there was a philosophical idea that the mode is the material world.
The mode is the material world.
Bhakti is the bridge.
Bhakti is the bridge.
Oh, no. So that was...
Nice. You have to read... Sure, there's a lot of symbolic meaning. Like, I know the samadhi because I was involved in the construction. In the samadhi, we have at the base, we have on the ground 9 panels with the 9 processes of devotional service as the foundation of everything. Then on the ground floor, or one floor up, we have Prabhupada's chamber and Vyasa's son, and then surrounded by the acharyas. And then at the top, we have some of Prabhupada's major preaching pastimes in the dome, in mosaic. Then there are the demigods showering flowers on Prabhupada. And then at the very center at the top, we have Kolok. You know, so there is also a symbolic progression in the building. So, but the big temple, I don't know much about it. I'm just... Bhakti Churu Maharaj. He knows so much.
His last side beach, I went to the office.
Yeah.
He was scraped up something. No, somebody put it there while they were designing. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's not really going to be.
Okay.
Yeah, then? That's what he said. So anyway, maybe it's not going to be good. Anyway, have it.
Yeah. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Thank you very much.